Welcome back, everybody. And here we are with the second day of the sixth Hallucinogenesis conference. And we've already started with all the sessions, interesting sessions. And I would like you to get a little bit of energy in as we are sitting most of the day. Let's start moving. How do you think about that? What do you think? So let's start moving a little bit. I'm going to give you a challenge, like first not moving for the first 10 seconds while we listen to this music. Okay, don't move at all. Still. We are still, don't move, not even the fingers, not even your feet. Let's go to work. Is that message that's being there? Because the thing about attitude, and now slowly we're going to start moving our heads to the rhythm, yes. And slowly getting into it and thinking about partying. Imagine that party that you are there and you are with all your friends or the people that you want to be, and slowly getting the rhythm into your body, into your shoulders, into your head. And smile, remember, smile is just right under your nose. You can stand up, let's give it 2 minutes of attitude, of changing the body. Let's give some oxygen to the body. Yes, let's move it. Like if it was full party on. And we are there. Ooh, let's go to work. Yeah. We choose the attitude, we choose the energy. Depends on us. It's only us the ones that depend on. Yeah. Let's go. So with energy, more energy, yeah! Woo! Good, energy, move! You can keep on moving, yeah! Imagine if you want to put energy in, so we have to get it out, it's like a circle. Woo! I love it, I'm seeing here all the panelists dancing, I love that, yeah! So here we go, yeah! Oh yeah, with wind there, and we're getting our body warm. We're getting ready for the next session. Yes. And now we're going to work. Let's go to work. Yeah. We're going to do our last 10 seconds. Let's go to work. I don't know if stopping the music or we continue. Yes. Let's go to work. Super. Let's go to work. Ready? We're going to stop. Let's go to work. In 10, 9, 8, 7, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and stop. Whoa, how does that feel? It's about attitude, it's about what we put in. It depends on us. We have, I'm breathing in because now, how it changes our body, eh? Does that feel good? Yes. Oxytocin going, all the lead from the hormones, taking cortisol out, yes, and taking things that stress us out. So here we are. I'm going to pass the word to Lenneke van Draeger for the next super session of panelists. So enjoy it, and I'll see you later.
Thank you, Oliver, and thank you for getting us started in such a salutogenic way. Fantastic. Lovely, actually, to be with this whole panel. But before I'm going to introduce you to everyone or introduce myself, you just were in sessions about interventions and you all discussed about interventions. I want you to take a piece of paper and think for yourself, what would I throw, what would I stop doing if I think about the salutogenic intervention. So what will I never do again if I start doing a salutogenic intervention? Take a piece of paper. I give you 1 minute. You write down on this piece of paper what you're never going to do again. And you have 1 minute now. Okay, the 1 minute is finished. My watch said beep, 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 beep. Now I want you to take that piece of paper. You take it together. You put it and you put it all together and you throw it away. Very good. So we've got rid of that. And now we can think of what we do want to do. Welcome to this really nice panel session with a very nice number of panelists. I introduced myself already yesterday, so I would like to give first word to Laura. Laura, can you please tell who are you and introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Lenneke. Well, I am actually a colleague of Lenneke, and I love working with Lenneke because we both are very much trying to, let's say, implement a salutogenic orientation both to our education as well as our research. So I'm very happy that we are on this panel today about this topic specifically. My area of focus is food, food, food. People who know me, they recognize that very well. And currently I'm trying to apply a salutogenic orientation to efforts to enable more sustainable and healthful eating, specifically in the EU. So that's very short about me.
Thank you, Laura. So what will we do in this session? Well, first of all, we will have an exchange about what happened in all these lovely sessions we had already before this panel session. Then we will have a salutogenic intermezzo, so be prepared that we're going to do really something salutogenic also in the middle. And after that, we will look at future steps. And because this is a conference where we want to everyone to be involved, we like you to also be actively involved on the Jamboard as well. But let me first make a round to all our panelists. And then afterwards, we explain that you can also use the Jamboard to join into the discussion as well as into the chat box. I would first like to ask Jessica Bloem, can you please introduce yourself shortly?
Thank you very much, Lenneke. Yeah, I'm born and raised in Germany, but now living in the Netherlands and working both at the University of Groningen and also at the University of Tampere in Finland. I'm a work and organizational psychologist, specifically occupational health psychology. And my research actually started looking at the effects of vacations on health and well-being of employees and performance and creativity. But then I moved more towards looking at different kind of recovery episodes, also shorter periods of recovery, like weekends, evening hours, breaks at work. And yeah, my work is very much shaped by my postdoc period that I had living in Finland for 5 years and the quality of working life there and the way people look at occupational health in these countries and investigate occupational health. So it's a big inspiration for me. And I was introduced to the model of salutogenesis by Georg Bauer and his team in Switzerland. And I knew a little bit about positive psychology. So I come from that background. And I'm really excited now to learn more. This is my first time at the conference. So it's really exciting to hear what you have been working on and how you look at the concepts that we work with and, yeah, to broaden my view on health.
Thank you, Jessica. Very nice. And nice to have you in Groningen. We should come over and meet each other as well.
Yes.
Same country.
Yeah.
Eva Langeland, we wrote a nice chapter together.
Yes, we do. Very nice cooperation. Yes. Thank you. Yes, my name is Eva Langeland, and I am working as a professor in health science at Western Norway University of Applied Sciences. And I'm living in Bergen, and I also born in Bergen. My research interests are mainly salutogenesis. I have worked on salutogenesis since the 1980s. Then Professor Ulla Kvarnström, she began at the University of Bergen and introduced me to salutogenesis and especially the salutogenic orientation. And I think that was a very interesting perspective and a paradigm. So I was starting working on that, and I've done that since that. And my main interest is in salutogenic interventions, and I've done some experiences, and I think it's very interesting to develop it further.
Thank you, Asia. Yes. Oh, sorry, you wanted to say more? Go ahead.
Yes, I just can say that my personal interest that is salutogenic is outdoor life. I like to walk and jogging and running, and I think that's very salutogenic. And also in my job, where I'm sitting a lot, it's very good to come out and do some exercise.
Yes, I agree. Very good. Thanks, Eva. And then the following one is Shefali Shori. Shefali, go ahead. Introduce yourself.
Thank you, Lenike. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to the different people from all parts of the world who is streaming in this panel session. I am honored to be here. My name is Shefali. I'm an academic, nurse, and midwife by profession, and I'm working in National University of Singapore. It's almost early evening here. And my encounter with salutogenesis is started with my honor to be part of a global working group for salutogenesis, where I am working with Lenike very closely. And we are the first university in Southeast Asia where we are introducing the concept of salutogenesis. And my research focuses on women and child health. I develop psychosocial intervention, and especially working on SOC. I know I have heard some presentations earlier. Some people like to use the word SOC. So I'm working on SOC and self-efficacy, basically to enhance well-being and health for the people around me, especially women and child health across the perinatal period, right? From pregnancy up till the childbirth. And I like what Eva just shared, that it doesn't just work in my professional life, also in my personal life. I like to remain and participate in salutogenesis activities like hiking. I like to go for jogging. I like Zumba and anything with high energy. And thank to Oliver, who started this session right in the mood, which I wanted to be dance and spread the positivity. Over to you, Lenike. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you, Shefali. Then Rusha, you introduce yourself also.
Yes, thank you. My name is Rusha Maas, and I work as it's called the first amanuensis, which is researcher and educator at the NTNU in Trondheim. Like Jessica, I'm born and raised in Germany, but I've been living here in Trondheim now for half my life. Even when I look outside and see the summer weather, I don't really know why. I was introduced to salutogenesis when I did my PhD, where I got the, I was so lucky to get Bengt Lindstrom as my core supervisor, so I didn't really have any chance to not use salutogenesis. But as my main interest before was health promotion in the neighborhood, I kind of had to go in a very active dialogue with the theory, I felt, to find out how it can be applied on this higher level in a way. But I was very intrigued from the first moment, actually, and I really had a lot of fun, and I really feel like I got a lot of insights out of working with this theory from then. And also I'm kind of connected to all of you, which I'm very happy. So I'm really happy how fate played me in this regard. So my professional and my personal interest actually is about trying to create the systems in which individuals and communities can thrive. So my focus is on the systemic level and on the level of society and policies and how they can be implemented and all of this. And it's really a huge area I'm going into. And I think this is a work we have just started the last years. Not only me, I see it's a lot of people who are getting more into this. And this is really, it's actually giving me a little bit goosebumps just thinking about it. So I think, there's a lot of fun waiting for us ahead. And I also had this session now where I have very interesting presentations and get some new ideas. And I think this is the point of being here, isn't it?
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you, Rusha. Wonderful. And I think all together we have such a lovely panel all together. But of course, all of you also have all these wonderful resources and ideas. So we want you to be actively involved on the Jamboard. And since I need to put in my resources to help for the techniques, Chef Lee is going to explain you and show you the Jamboard of how you can get involved in our session also on the Jamboard, but also on the chat if you want. Go ahead, Chef Lee.
I'm sorry, I thought I did that. Thank you. All right, so I hope you can see the Jamboard. Basically, we will be going through the activities here. There are a few things for you to take note. The easiest one, which I like to use, is you can use this sticky note, write something and save, and it is done. Very simple, and that's what I have just done to welcome you all on this session here. You can even use images if you would like to, and you can even erase if you are not happy with what's going on. You can choose the pen if you want to write, and also, just to tell you, different colors. So, you know, we have a lot of beautiful, vibrant options available here. And I didn't see this one. So, yeah, there's a text box. You can even, you know, add a text box and write whatever you want. So that's very simple. So what we want you to do is practice and then enter all these whatever questions Lenike is going to guide us into. And then we will have a fun time together. Thank you. Over to you, Lenike.
Thank you, Shefali. Wonderful explanation. You can easily assess it and try to get on the Jamboard and get involved, and we will have a look at it. So let's now look at the sessions of this morning. Maybe Laura, would you be able to tell a little bit about what were key issues in the session you were in together with Leah?
Yes, definitely. Thank you, Lenneke. I was in actually session 5, that was on digital interventions. And we had some beautiful examples of how Salutogenesis can inspire, let's say, digital tools in very, very different ways. It was very interesting. We had Sela and Alicia who presented a digital card game for young people. And I actually really loved the design of this game, because it were cards like in a card game, and they were really very beautifully visualized. And the idea of the cards was to empower those young people in maintaining mental well-being, and it was about difficult situations they were facing in life and how they could express it, keep their inner light going. It was really beautiful in salutogenic wordings. And then we had Leah is my colleague. She works with me on a project in which we try to engage people in more sustainable ways of both producing food and consuming food. And salutogenesis is like a theoretical foundation. And one of the things that comes up with these types of designing a practical application, especially digitally, and there were also some questions about this, is that you are working with practice, so with a game developer, and they have also certain ways of thinking about how a game should look like, and how then are you going to translate your theoretical principles and ideas to practice? And that's kind of an interesting topic I would like to pose as well today. And then we had Shimon. Shimon he shared a story of meeting Aaron Antonovsky 45 years ago, and he was still kind of, you know, he is still very much inspired by that, because, and I think also Shifra told us about that yesterday, that Aaron Antonovsky was about keep asking yourself questions all the time. And this was also what Shimon shared, in a way that he said, I always had to keep questioning how to connect the whole person with the whole complexity of the context in which people are living. And right now he is retired, but he's putting all his effort in trying to, let's say, reshape a bit of the American health system, quite an effort, in translating this idea from 45 years ago into a digital tool in which he actually wants to provide people with strengthening ways to strengthen their inner resources through different types of apps. with connecting them to the social environment, also through digital tools, as well as making them aware of their political environment and the possibility of influence. Very comprehensive, beautiful program. Finally, we had our last speaker was Mark from Spain, and he showed us kind of a very similar way of my project also is working, like trying to use ideas from gamification. Gamification is also a certain perspective on specifically motivation. And from that presentation, we really had the question for the public here, like, what actually is the sharing between salutogenesis and specifically meaningfulness and the ideas of gamification on motivation, which is a lot about trying to trigger intrinsic motivation. So that little spark, that little fire within people that may keep them actively participating in life. And with that, I want to finish because then I'm back with the first presentation we heard about that inner fire.
Inner fire is one of your key issues. I yes. think you're going to put on the Jamboard. Wonderful.
Yes, I will. Yeah, I will.
So if I then go to Jessica, if you look at salutogenic interventions in your session, what would you say are key issues coming out of your session?
Yeah, I think the key, like our session, maybe I can briefly explain, was about crafting behaviors. So how people can proactively fulfill their psychological needs. And we looked at different domains, life domains, where they can do this. So they can either do it at work, they can do it off work, or at the boundaries between life domains. And what we were pondering about, or what I would also like to continue talking about with you, is where does SOC come in this process of crafting? And so far, how we look at it is that sense of coherence may affect people's awareness of their own psychological needs and then motivate their behavior in the next step to actually change things in their environment in order to fulfill those needs. And also, we think it could also be a moderator, that if you have a high sense of coherence, that it's then easier for you to know which kind of behaviors do actually help you in order to shape and fulfill your needs.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you. And then Eva, in your session, or do you think came out, what are really key issues for salutogenic interventions?
Yes, I was in the session about empowerment-orientated salutogenic interventions. And we had four presentations, very interesting, and different populations. So it was in the life course, we might say it. It was about a health resource intervention program for seniors. And that was a presentation from Betsy Sia from Singapore. And she had tested out this intervention in the pilot study. And it was very interesting and promising results. And I think she has the potential to improve and further research on this intervention, because it was a very comprehensive and interesting intervention. And we had another presentation that was named Be Yourself Program. And I think that was very interesting because it was a comprehensive intervention study. And it was Alex Morales that presented this study. And he was describing the connection between life skills and sense of coherence. And it included very large samples, and it was very comprehensive intervention. And it was among students between 12 and 16 years old. And I want to follow this intervention further, because I think that the main issue in this intervention was identity. And that is, as you know, a main resistance resource in salutogenic thinking, and especially interesting in this younger group of people, of how they develop this their identity and sense of coherence. And then we had of Shahar Levi Ari from Tel Aviv University. He introduced a stress reduction strengthening program for strengthening sense of coherence. That was also a pilot study. And it was in the general population. It was a 9-day course. And I think it's interesting that he also included a relatively comprehensive intervention, because he emphasized the story of the participant rather than the diagnosis, and also active adaptation as the main focus in the intervention. So I think that's what's very interesting in this content of the intervention. And then I also had a presentation myself, and I was presented an intervention that include, it's among, originally, it's among people with residents that are living in the community but need help to stay at home. And they have mental health challenges. And I presented the intervention, the content, including the salutogenic orientation and the main concept, and also the result of this in a randomized controlled trial, and then also the interviews that I have done with people that have participated in such groups. And I think it's in general, it's important to do both effect studies and also in-depth interviews, because then we can grasp what is salutogenic processes. And based on that, we can develop new intervention that maybe is more sensitive to change sense of coherence.
Very good. Nice plea, I think, also to have this combination of not looking also like what works and how does it work, and asking these questions. Lovely. Then, Shefali, what were key issues coming out of the session you were in?
Thank you, Lenike. So we have a session on salutogenesis intervention in healthcare settings. We have people coming from Norway, Sweden, and then Zurich, and Asia, Singapore, and Nepal. So they presented on preliminary findings, and one of it was my presentation, which was on a systematic review. So maybe I can just give you a quick brief of what happened, and then the key issues, a way forward for us. So the first presentation was by Tonya. She's from NTNU, and she talked about, that was something I was very intrigued, because she's examining how health promotion and salutogenesis is being utilized or being practiced by the different healthcare professionals, multidisciplinary teams, as well as the patients in these healthy life centers. They call them HLC, which is a brilliant concept. Why I said that? Because unlike many other countries, in these HLC, the patient participants or a client, they can self-refer themselves and can seek help. It's all about health promoting activities. And she's doing a very perfect design, exactly what Eva said, that we should not just do a quantitative studies, we also should have interviews and a qualitative design. So she's doing a very fantastic ethnographic study, observations, as well as focus group. Very preliminary findings. I was very intrigued. Can you share more? But she's still analyzing the data. So what she actually presented so far is that it can be seen that there are multiple factors which may hinder the actual use of salutogenesis in any particular setting, especially where she has examined. And she felt the factors can be, for example, there are multiple roles the healthcare professionals they are taking. They are on time constrained, and the services they are providing, everything is in a haste. And also, still, she feels that the people who she has observed, even though they are into this health promotion, but still they tend to go back to the biomedical model. So she feels that still there's a room for improvement. And we are looking forward to her publication. She's writing a publication and she's continuing with the different phases of study before we know actual holistic picture, what is going on in HLCs in Norway. So that was fantastic. The second presentation was by me. I'll hold on for that. I'll go to Anya. She is from Zurich University, postdoc under Prof. George, who is our very good friend. So she had a very interesting study, which is on nurses. She wanted to examine that whenever you are in any intervention, are you a direct participant or is this the indirect participant? And how does it differ as far as the outcomes are concerned? If I am receiving an intervention as a direct participant, do I get better results as compared to those who do not and so-called, you know, receive things indirectly? And which is very normal in nursing because of, you know, the kind of shift work we do and all that, it is not possible to get everybody under the, you know, intervention. So what happened is some will be chosen probably randomly, hopefully, and the others then hear, say, and all that stuff. So what she felt, not surprisingly, those who are with direct participation and in any intervention, they did better in most of the outcomes as compared to those with the indirect participation. I like it that she acknowledged that for certain populations, it's not possible to engage everybody as a direct participant. So what I liked about this particular presentation, there's a hope that when there's a direct as well as indirect participants under one umbrella in one particular organization, there should be a work done how the communication takes place or things takes place, that there is this synergy between these two teams so that nobody feel left out. And the three things which she talked about is communication, like I mentioned, and also engagement and involvement between the different groups at different time points. Even though we have a direct one who is taking all the intervention and all the indirect should also have certain engagements with this direct group so that they can get the first-hand information and also taking care of all the logistics and all that. I think this study has a lot of potential, especially internationally, because especially now in COVID situation globally, I think nurses and many other healthcare professionals are feeling burnout. So having any intervention directly or indirectly would be good that proper engagement and involvement takes place between the participants. So moving on to the third participant, he has a very unique background. He's actually from Nepal, Mr. Thapa. He's a PhD student and doing his studies in Sweden and also working as a part-time lecturer. So he presented something which is use of SOC. I'm going to use his words, a sense of coherence in Nepal, which was one of the first time that they have used this instrument in Nepal. So they wanted to see, yes, it has been used globally, and very nice question asked by my very dear friend, Uni from NTNU. She was asking about, did they validate this SOC instrument? They didn't, and they, I think, checked the face validity and do back translation in Nepalese, and they tested SOC of Nepalese mothers of children between age of 1 to 7 years old. So they wanted to check how, you know, their sense of coherence is. A little bit of a, you know, they would think about this population was they were actually part of another intervention thing. So I won't create that noise here. But the important thing to take note here is that the women, Nepalese women who were the mothers of children between age of 1 to 7 years old, their SOC was, the scores were comparatively lower to the countries from the developing sides, Western world. However, it was comparable to the similar countries like, for example, India. So that's something to look out for. That for me, the take-home message there was how culture plays an important part when we are building SLC. So that's something to take note. And lastly is my presentation, which I was, it was a systematic review, mixed methods, quantitative and qualitative studies were analyzed together. And the topic was how salutogenesis theory has been used in perinatal period. Believe me, you will be like, really? I couldn't find much studies to begin with because most of the time salutogenesis theory is either used in chronic disease management, aging population, but in maternity unit, there were very, very few studies when we did this review. And that's why quantitative review ended up with a mixed method so that we can get a holistic picture of what is going on with salutogenesis in the maternity unit. So because of the time, I will quickly wrap up this. What is the take-home message for this particular systematic review is that we need to take care aware of certain things, for example, factors which affects cervicogenesis, especially in the maternity unit, is a very specialized area, and also the context and the culture and ethnicity, because the most of the studies also is from Western side. We don't have much studies from the Asian side, so we can't provide a proper generalization of how cervicogenesis theory can be used. It's a lot of implications I have shared in a published paper. Write to me if you would like to know more. And so that's what something we shared in our session. It was really a great session. And I want to shout out to Dr., if I remember her name, Tina or Nina, because she was very intrigued that why in my systematic review, no doctor was represented. It was only nurses or midwives and mothers and the fathers.
Thank you, Shafali.
Yes, and the answer was there was no healthcare professionals like doctors were engaged in these studies. No. So that has something to take note. Thanks, Lenny.
That's so interesting that sometimes we forget about the people who we're dealing with, but on the other hand, we also sometimes forget to involve professionals. And also nice to point out this aspect of culture. And I'm really impressed about the speed in which you can talk. That's really fantastic. So, Rusia, in your session, before we go into this lovely salutogenic intermezzo, can you tell me a little bit about what were your key issues in your session, which you really thought, wow, these are eye-openers?
Well, in my session was about multi-level salutogenic interventions. And we had, myself and three very, very interesting presentations. I think I learned from all of them. We didn't start with it, but the session included a very inspiring talk about the need and maybe also the challenge about moving from looking at the bad and all the things we want to avoid in life and look at the good things and how we can achieve them, and also get other people, because if you think this multi-level, this is also always about working together with other people, how to get them to look beyond the challenges. So, which I think is one of the key issues about cervicogenesis, like how to get acceptance for our outlook on life in a way. And then we had some, different approaches maybe of trying to apply cervicogenesis on interventions on collaborations, where it was very different perspectives, actually. Like we had one presentation about implementing health and all policies in Thailand, a local case example, which was really interesting to follow, about how they worked with the different levels. And this was linked to a health literacy approach. So the main outcome was kind of health literacy, but he really showed how the different levels of governance community have to work together to reach individuals and social groups. There also was one presentation about combining cervicogenesis with a health assets approach, which also was quite interesting and which kind of posed the question, what happens when or how can resources which we find around us be translated or developed into assets we have in our backpack? This was one of the main questions, which I also think was quite important. And me, I had a presentation about the collaboration processes, which are needed to really implement cervicogenesis into policies and local municipalities and cities, where I tried to apply the angle of coherence and if it's possible to create coherence in multi-sectorial, multi-level collaboration between the sectors and between all the levels, which have to kind of work together to really achieve change in societies. So these were the presentations. Thank all the presenters. I think the common themes which we kind of identified was, well, one of them was about these challenges and solutions and resources, but also, the challenges, because we maybe as salutogenic researchers, we kind of want to look at the solutions and at the positive things. But we had a very nice discourse with one of the audience, Ottmar Bass, who had very important thoughts about this from an individual point of view, about this really addressing problems and overcoming them, which may be, and as Antonovsky also said, is at the heart of the salutogenic process. So maybe we can't abolish all the challenges and problems. And the other one, I think, was about this, well, how to overcome the challenge, how to apply resources, identify resources. And one important aspect, which kind of came visible in all of our presentations and which also links back to what Shefali said now, is that you need to be involved actively.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of key about
it. Yeah.
So yeah. I can stop there.
Thank you, Rusha. No, I think the same happened in a workshop which was done by Crystal Polhouse, facilitated. I recognize many points which you mentioned, also this active involvement and the combination of doing something around the sense of coherence as well as the general resistance resources, but also very much looking at history and what people have been going through rather than coming from a blank page. People come with their history, and that's something we need to take into account very much when we go into interventions. Laura, what happened on the Jamboard? Can you?
Yes, while people were talking, a lot happens on the Jamboard. I think most people can find it because I don't see questions in the chat. And I see certain topics coming up. You can also see them, right, Afria, of the panelists. Yes. I see a lot of nice answers also to my topic of like how to ignite the inner fire. I see the explanation of how actually I think this person is an osteopath and a salutogenic communication therapist as well. And he writes about the questions he starts his consultation with, which are indeed, I can see very much trying to get into that or lighten up that inner fire. I also see some questions on methodology, and I see some questions on that was related to a question I noticed yesterday on the general Jamboard of our session. That was an interesting question when you're designing interventions or change processes, like there is somehow a difference between when people are experiencing change, so like they're in your intervention, but also like reflecting on their experience of change and how to deal with those, let's say, different dimensions of meaning. I also stumbled upon that in our project, like how to deal with that, and are there different outcomes or not? Are they maybe the same? So maybe any one of the other panelists would like to contribute to that. Does anyone recognize that?
One reaction, and then we're going to go to a salutogenic intervention. Who would like to react? Eva.
I want you to, could you please repeat the question?
Yes, Eva. The question is that if we're talking about, let's say, igniting an inner fire in an intervention, and when people are in the intervention, they are experiencing, probably, if you hope, a change, right? Something will change inside of them. But it's as important as well is for those people to reflect on those inner changes, because indeed, that's also a comment on the Jamboard. If you look at the theory, that is supposed to make the true change. So not the change itself, but the reflection on the change. Does that sound familiar for you, Eva?
If I understand you right, I think I think it's important when you are changing, I think it's important to reflect on it, because otherwise I don't think there will be any change, because you have to get it internalize it. Yes, comprehensibility, manageability, and meaning, I think you have to express it and talk to others about it in order to learn the learning process.
Yep. Yes, yes, I agree very much with that. But somehow in some interventions, that doesn't get that much of attention, because what I noticed in all in my projects and research is that people find that part very difficult and quite often also try to avoid it. It may be also something in society that is like a social construction, that reflection is somehow not really easy, or it's not, you know, very accepted.
Mm. I think it depends on, if I can say, it depends on what the change constitute of. Because if you are, for example, let's take physical activity. If you are in an intervention where you introduce physical activity and the participants get positive experience with that, then I think it's quite easy to further do this exercise. But on the other side, if it's more working on how to change your thoughts and then your feelings and more inside, I think it's very important to express it and use language and change with others in order to get some change that will be over time.
Good. I see the others waving hands and wanting to react. And I'm going to do this intervention now, even though, because we've been busy with our heads all the time, but we want this salutogenic experience as well. And we have a lovely poem, which really is about meaningful interventions. And I want Laura, please, to read this beautiful poem for us.
Yes, I will. It is a poem written by a lady, Brooke Hampton. And this is a lady who tries to search some kind of a bit more silence and peacefulness in life. You can find the poem on her website, Barefoot 5. I'm busy, but not in the way most people accept. I'm busy calming my fear and finding my courage. I'm busy listening to my kids. I'm busy getting in touch with that what is real. I'm busy growing things and connecting with the natural world. I'm busy questioning my answers. I'm busy being present in life.
That's really, really beautiful. So, if life is so important and we started this dancing, I think it's also a wonderful idea now to all stand and dance together. And I hope you're ready. So all stand up. And I would like to ask the technicians to please start the music, and we will have some time for dancing. If you don't want to dance, don't dance. But if you like it, come and join us. Stand up and listen to the text. It's beautiful.
Let's go.
Yes, thank you. Wonderful. Thank you for all joining in and feeling our bodies again, because we tend to go whoop all the time in our head. And it's so nice to feel your body and have fun. And I want to thank Lea Rosen, by the way, who actually found this beautiful music for us. It's lovely and it fits the theme very much. So applause for her. So, Laura, what's the next step?
Yes, open microphone. Yes, thanks. After this dancing, I'm totally in a different mood. So, we are having 25 minutes left, and we have one other activity, which is next steps, but we still have a lot of interesting questions on our Jamboard. So I think we should pay a bit more attention to that, right?
Good.
We all agree to that. Mm-hmm. So I would like to ask one of the panelists, do you see a topic that you want to reflect upon?
Yeah, Laura, thank you. I think I would like to speak about culture, and especially because this is something that has been coming up very often in my research whenever I use Psilocygenesis, especially that is something, the concept has not, or theory has not been used in certain parts of the world, especially Asia and Middle East. And I actually find a very interesting question here that if there is any different term for Psilocygenesis in different cultures. So that actually kind of, you know, ignite that fire, as well as, you know, all my thought antennas that, wow, that's very interesting. So based on my experience, of course, please experts are here, chip in. There's no specific word per se for a different cultures, but what we do is how we measure, for example, you know, SOC and all that, we have different languages that has been you know, used to develop as well as translate those instruments. But that come really very interesting. And while this question was coming in, okay, somebody's answering that they were very happy with our dance. So I actually tried to even Google up. There's apparently a webpage where they have asked people to come forward and write down what if they feel that they can find a right word in their particular language, native language, for example, Persian. I'm going to put that in the chat chat room soon, and so that everybody can see if they can contribute to that, because I think that's something very interesting to know. Because reason being, what happened in my session too, we are using translated versions of, for example, measuring SOC and all that, but how to make this concept clearer to the native language people in a particular cultures, I think that's something interesting and something to ponder on. So yeah, this is something I wanted to talk about, because I think that's something our people are in a Jamboard, they are asking such questions on if there's any terms for Psilocygenesis. Thank you.
Maybe it's a good idea, Shefali, if you share your screen again so that people who cannot see the Jamboard maybe see some of the topics which are raised. And if any of the other panels want to react to one of these comments, please.
Are you able to see the Jamboard?
Yep.
Okay.
I see it. Can I just say something about the, and that actually kind of links to what we've been discussing before, the salutogenic intermezzo, this kind of interplay between experiencing and reflecting change. And I think from a systems level, we also, I think this is kind of linked to this active participation that has been popping up everywhere. And I think it's this distinction is maybe we have this kind of thought that first we experience and then we reflect upon. And a lot of things you can't reflect upon before afterwards. But what came to my mind listening to all my presenters is that maybe the reflecting also comes before the experience, because our thoughts also guide our experiences. So I think maybe it's about developing this kind of feedback loops where you have this kind of, as a kind of parallel processes, which kind of try to improve each other. And also I think, and that maybe it takes us over to the next, I think it's very interesting this that the active participation emerges as this central, because in the original theory, active participation in decision making and in shaping outcomes is linked to meaningfulness, which yesterday has been posed as the most important dimension of the SOC. So I think we're kind of going into a circle now. So for me, one of the next questions, just to make a kind of link, is like, how can we become active participants in the various systems and our own life? And how can we raise this capacity to experience and reflect and be part of shaping later experience in a way?
Yeah, lovely how you make coherence of yesterday and today and putting that that together. Eva, did you also want to react? Because I see yourself unmuted.
Yes, I can say a little about how to initiate and achieve change in a salutogenic direction. And I think it's very important to think of what is your outcome. And usually we use, among other outcomes, sense of coherence as outcome, because that's the main concept in salutogenesis. And then I think to achieve this change that we want, I think we have to make intervention that is sensitive to change sense of coherence. And then you have to make an intervention that built on salutogenesis and also, and both the salutogenic orientation and this main concept, where you ask people, for example, about resistance resources they are using based on their own life situation or what they might use. So back to this that were mentioned very much yesterday, that to ask good questions, and then we invite the participants in an intervention to do reflection on that. So, and maybe that will bring some change in the long run. Maybe they do not answer here and now, but maybe you start a reflection process that will maybe result in a positive change in the longer run. So I think I'm very occupied with the match between the content of the intervention and the outcome. And of course, we can have other outcomes and sense of coherence. We can have other salutogenic outcomes. But I think it's important to think salutogenic outcomes, because then it match with the salutogenic intervention, and then it's more sensitive for change.
Yeah, fantastic. I also saw Jessica, you also wanted to respond, I think. Go ahead.
Yes, yeah, I would like to come back to these two points. One, the reflection element, I think we raised a couple of times now, and I think it's a really key point in interventions, but is also, it carries a risk, or that's what we see in the interventions that we have been running, because we first make people aware of the psychological needs and also of the elements where they lack, actually, which needs are dissatisfied. And I think that also can, at least initially, have a backlash, a negative effect, that people's well-being goes down or their sense of coherence goes down, to then in the end increase again after they, especially when they engage actively in an intervention. But this is something to keep in mind, I think, and a challenge to deal with. And also another topic that relates to this is also the time frames to think about when we do interventions. When do we expect effects to show, and on which outcomes, like building on what Eva was saying, what do we actually measure as outcomes? Where do we expect to see the change? And in what time frames do we expect to see it? Because we, for example, work with small prompts that we send to people every day to engage in a healthy activity, or like well-being activity, like having this little dance that we had, or going for a walk in nature, these kind of elements. But that is probably not affecting their general level of well-being very easily, but we can probably see a boost right after the activity. But then other situations may overshadow the general well-being effects that we may be able to see. But I think that's really the challenge in intervention studies, to find the right timing and the right outcomes to measure, and also when to measure them.
I think that's a really good point, as sometimes if we tend to measure these, you know, starting points and we say, well, they're not effective, and probably a lot of the things are happening a lot years later. Just to also link to the summer school we are having in a salutogenic format, I've heard people who went away from the summer school sometimes and said, oh, I didn't like it at all, and then sent us messages 3-4 years later and thought, this really was effective and it started to make me think and do things differently. So I do think you're really right that's regarding time framing and where do we look at and what outcomes measures are so important indeed. So thank you for bringing up that point. Laura, how is the Jamboard going?
The Jamboard is looking lovely. People are drawing hearts, and that's really amazing. I think there is one question that has been there from the start, and that is a question about theory. And I know quite a while ago, Maurice Mittelmark wrote a very interesting article about how health promotion should have like a certain one theory, an integral theory, and that salutogenesis could serve like this. But I think I'm not sure. We have advanced, of course, in that. But this question is about the integral meta theory. And if people are using like such integral theories or ecological theories to design interventions. So that is actually a question. And it is, I think, also related to actually not only applying salutogenic theory, but as well other theories and integrate them or make a bigger whole framework. Is any one of you wanted to say something about that or the struggles with doing that? Eva.
I think you can look at salutogenesis as a meta, as a comprehensive meta theory, and you can use other smaller theories to complement salutogenesis. For example, the resistant resource quality of social support. Antonovsky defines it as a crucial resistance resource, but he do not elaborate on the concept social support. But then I think you may use other theories that elaborate about social support. So I think you can use salutogenesis as an umbrella paradigm, and you can use smaller theories to complement the salutogenic meta theory, if you dependent on what the content in the intervention is. You can, or for example, you can use a person-centered theory, because he is talking about looking at the person rather than the diagnosis. And then you can use person-centered theory to shed light on how to implement a person-centered approach. So I think it's meaningful to use other smaller theories that shed light on different resistance resources. Another is physical activity. We know that that is a resistance resource, but Antonovsky do not write so much about that. But we know now that it is a resistance resource, and then we can use other that have written about that. So I think we can use other under this umbrella to develop a salutogenic intervention.
I think that's a good point you raise, Eva, that there are so many other theories that we can indeed use and apply and in this whole field and make these nice combinations. Anybody else of the panel who would like to react on this theoretical question?
I could add that this is also, when I review papers, this is often what I notice, that there is a model missing of explaining why change is expected and how they went about. And ideas to use could be, for example, an intervention mapping approach that you could use that has a very systematic way of finding what is actually the problem, who are the groups that would benefit, and then in a very structured way, develop an intervention to help and also to evaluate if the intervention works, and if not, go into this process in the cycle again. So I like to think in these kind of terms also when thinking about interventions.
Thank you. I also know that, and that's one of the sessions which we didn't reflect on, where Roald Pijpker presented his work. He also made a very logical unraveling of the intervention together with Georg. And it's a good process to go through, because then you really think, oh, what's behind all this thinking? Even though we don't want a thing fixed in stone, it's very good to go through the different steps and to have a model behind it of what you're actually doing. So that's really nice. Laura, how are we in time?
Yes, I think we are going to the next, let's say, closing activity. My stomach is starting to roar, so I guess it's up to lunchtime, I think, for others as well. So that would mean interactivity two. There's a different Jamboard for that. You can just go to the next page of the Jamboard. It's all empty. So, Lenneke, do you want to introduce the activity?
I was actually, because we have, I think, only 9 minutes left. So I would suggest that people can think about further steps and put it on the Jamboard. But I really would like to have this reflection also, first starting off with the panel, but also with you. So I would like to ask all the panel members, and I'm just putting you without being prepared on this, think about one word which based on this morning session and also this panel session, which reflects a little bit the feeling you have now. I'm going to ask all the everybody listening also to have one word and write that on the Jamboard. And I'll give you 1 minute to think about it, because I'm just putting it in your face. So I'll time again. 1 minute. Think about one word.
Should we put it on the Jamboard, or you want
That's lovely if you put it on the Jamboard, and then I'll go around and ask you. The minute has started. It says beep, 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 beep. So I'll start with Shefali. Shefali, what's your one word in with your long sentences? That must be very difficult for you.
Openness.
Openness, wonderful. What about Rusha? What's your one word?
I didn't find one word, so I posed a question. I put in all the words. But that's
what's
very salutogenic, I heard. So my question is, how can we create interventions that actively involve those we want to reach to overcome challenges by reflecting on what is beyond this challenge?
Great, thank you. Jessica?
Intrigued.
Intrigued. And what about Eva?
Yes, creativity, I think, is important. To be creative.
Be creative. Laura?
Listening. And this is because Bengt Lindstrom told me many years ago that listening is actually the very much salutogenic intervention. I thought he was a bit, you know. But after all these years, I know he's right. Of course. Thanks, Bengt.
And my word would be enjoyment. And with that, I would all ask you to think about this one word and put it on the Jamboard, how you reflect on this session. And I really, really want to thank all the panel members who did a fantastic job. And I think we lovely put it all together, and everybody danced and had a great input. And I also want to especially thank Laura also for having this wonderful thing, doing it together in such a nice way. So thanks a lot, and I hope you will have a lovely lunch, and then also come back for the rest of the fantastic day we have organized for you. And I give the word to Oliver, because I see Oliver coming in the screen. So Oliver, floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Lenneke, Laura, Jessica, Shefali, Eva. Thank you very much for sharing, for being so interactive and creative, because it's the way of co-creating. I think that that's the way, with that mentality of openness that you were saying, and using these magnificent tools that we have digitally to be sharing from all over the world in a moment and co-creating something together. I think that's amazing. And we have an amazing opportunity of doing this sharing in a moment and creating that. It's not a manifest, but it's like something so clear that you can see the questions, to see the words, to see all the things there, and bring them down from the world of the ideas down to something more material that then we can start taking into pieces and working on it. So thank you very much, Lenneke, for the session and for being there, like moderating. I don't know if this is moderating the panelists, but yeah. Now I think it's time. Somebody was saying, oh, my tummy's rumbling, it's going, and we are going to have lunch. But I would like to remind you that you still can do that networking. We can go into different marketplaces. The marketplace, you have different areas where you can jump in through Wonder and find the people and just have amazing meetings with all the panelists, with Laura, with Eva, with Shefali, with Jessica, with Ruka, or with Lenneke, or with Georg, or whoever is there, jump in, or with Anna Pali that is always there trying to assess and help. The idea is this, to stay connected. And I also agree with all that listening. They say that music is the silence between notes. And that's what Debussy was saying, is the same. When we need to talk, one of the most important parts is silence, because it's there's where it goes like, whew. And about questions, I so agree. We have to make the proper questions. Which are the good questions at the right moment? I think it's not just about making questions, but do the questions at the right moment so that we can reflect on that, so we can go forward towards this challenge that is making the salutogenic model find its place in all the areas, because it's like a not holistic, like when we affect all the person is affect all society with the salutogenic model. So we're doing a great job, and now I let you to go for lunch. Enjoy lunch and see you later. Bye bye. Thank you.